Blog Talk Radio.
It's a new season. It's a new day.
you, look them right in the eyes. They might need a little help here, a little bit of light here. Tell them all that was stolen, is returned to you, a hundredfold. Make sure they enjoy that part. Is that all right with you? Is that okay if we return this a hundredfold back to you? Try it in the fire. Tell them, try it in the fire.
Try it in the fire.
But you're coming out. Go. Grab them by the hand and just pull on them gently. Just say, you're coming out. This is a church with many generations represented in it. There's some seasoned veterans and there's some young folks. And maybe some of you weren't raised in church all your life, so maybe you might relate to what we're saying here a little bit better. If you remember the words of that prophetic song by Diana Ross. What's she saying, Mark?
I'm coming.
Hello, everyone. This is Roberta. This is Roberta of Roberta Inspires Omni Media. Hello. God bless you and a happy MLK Day. The Lord is good. His mercy endureth for all generations. I am pleased to be with you today. And I have a very, very special segment that I hope you will listen to, share. If you're having to listen on the replay, I'm hoping you will share it with others because it's a very timely subject in light of the movie, two movies. One, When They Saw Us, When They Saw Us, and also Just Mercy, which I saw just the other day. And I'm here to tell you, oh, Lord. Oh, my gosh. What powerful, powerful things that these movies portray and have allowed to be used to really bring light to some really awful tragedies in the life of others. But I want to just let you know, we are doing what we can through this radio show and hopefully other media venues to bring these issues to light. I have an interview that I conducted recently with a young man named Matt from the Washington State prison community. And he talks about his experience, his own experience, and all of what he's gone through. And it's very moving. I just found it very, very moving. I'm going to tell you right now, because of the nature of the interview and also because of the process of doing this interview, it's going to be very organic, because originally he and some other young people who had experienced this were scheduled to come on a conference call, but they are not able to do so. So we had to wing it another way. So you will hear me attempting to, oh my gosh, try to get you all the audio in various ways. So bear with me. It's a two-part interview. And I also am hoping to, to have some call-ins that may comment and help and support, and just asking you to pray for the success of this, that this particular broadcast will help those who cannot help themselves as he shares his story. This is unedited, unscripted, so to speak. And so, you know, it's not going to be fancy, and you're going to hear me trying to do some things with it to, you know, get it recorded. So if you'll bear with me, it's going to be great. Our episode may be a little bit longer than usual, but I think it's worth it, and I hope you agree. And so here we have it, and I'm going to noun. I've been trying to get this stuff uploaded in all kinds of ways. I thought at one point I was going to have to bring it to you straight from the phone, and still may have to if things don't go as planned. So without further ado, I'm going to start this interview, and the way it's looking now, as with technology, I may have to bring it to you straight from my phone as it was recorded, and I ask you to bear with me because I don't see the upload of the episode as of yet, but I'm going to have speakers on so you can hear, and so we'll just do it that way, and in the future, hopefully we can fancy this up, but for now, I just want you to hear the story. So here goes.
That's my phone. Please.
Well, my name is Matt. I was charged with an accomplice to murder Scott. When I was given 25 years, 10 months in prison.
Let me start it again, because I think you cannot, may not be able to hear this, and for whatever reason, now my other stuff is
working. Hello, this is Roberta of Roberta Inspires Omni Media, and I have a very special guest and a very special segment that we're doing. This follows after the movie, When They See Us, and I have
some young
to talk about there when they see you. Joining me first.
I'm sorry.
Matthew, tell us. Your length of sentence.
I'm please. Having trouble with the audio. Let me see if I can.
I was charged with an accomplice to murder at the age of 17 years old, and I was given 25 years, 10 months in prison. 25 years of it without any good time, any day for day to be served.
Okay. All right, so 25, where are you in the 25-year process at this point?
As right now, I'm on my 18th year of prison.
Okay. Let's see. Matthew, being so young, basically a kid, what emotional and mental experience we saw in the movie, the trauma that experienced being put in jail with grown-ups, and was that your experience that you came went in with grown-ups, and what was it like for you emotionally and mentally being incarcerated at such a young age and in an environment with perhaps men that were older than you?
My emotional and mental experience at a young age coming to prison was lacking and all over the place. The reason that most of us experience that type of thing is we grew up in the streets, and through these negative ways that we handle our issues, they enter into our growth, both emotionally and mental, in other areas of normal growth. But not to mention, a lot of us already have emotional and mental problems that are prevalent. Prison continues to consist this consist of handling issues by hiding them with anger, laughter, and denial to show anything else could possibly make you possible. Anything else that you show that could make you a victim or open some kind of scheme. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is just a continued perpetration of the system that has built to what it is today.
Okay, and you mean like the sort of school to prison system?
The school to prison pipeline, the systematic, I think, of the American culture itself from all the way back in to 1619 when African Americans first came here.
Okay, so great. folks, again, this is Roberta. Roberta Inspires Omni Media, and I'm interviewing Matt. And Matt is really telling his own When They Saw Us story. And we'll be joined by some other young men who have had a similar experience. Matt, from your perspective, because I just was taken when I saw that movie with the way these kids were treated and interrogated. And I just want to know, what was your initial interrogation like? You know, again, being a young person, were your parents allowed to be present?
So my perspective of initial interrogation is what I expected from the police. At first, them tried to befriend me, saying they cared and wanted to help, and quickly becoming upset when I would not answer their questions. Once you ask for your attorney, they turn towards that they're there to arrest you and try to throw away the key.
Wow.
More so when you're a young black teen, or you know what the so-called friend of what black people would say today, Hillary Clinton would say, is a super predator. And you could see her push for the 1994 crime bill.
Mm-hmm.
And in Washington State at the time of my arrest, because I was 17, they did not have to let my parents be present, and they actually placed me in an adult jail and never even stepping into a juvenile center or seeing a juvenile judge.
Oh my gosh. So it was the laws in Washington State that allowed them to do that to you. That's horrible.
Yes, it's called an automatic decline. So if you're charged with a serious violent felony and you're 16 or 17 years old, it's an automatic decline. They don't go to a prosecutor to see if they can take you out of juvenile services or anything. They just put you right into the adult system.
I think that's kind of what happened with one of the young men. In the movie, he was just thrust right in to jail and at the adult level. I think he was only about 16, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You have done an excellent job of rising above your circumstances and also trying to give back. Tell me about your involvement in the Black Prisoners Association. I may have the name wrong. Please correct it if I do. And how it has impacted you.
So the name of it is the Black Prisoners Caucus.
Okay, thank you.
And my involvement in the Black Prisoners Caucus, it was key to my growth and development. Right now I'm the secretary for the Youth Committee. The Black Prisoners Caucus has helped me grow in mind and soul. It has given me and other Black men the ability to connect with other Black people within the communities that we are absent from and still belong to. We're also able to show people of different races that Black men are not what society has labeled us.
Right.
And we do this by maintaining a fully inclusive way of building across racial lines that prison has been known to have.
Okay. This is so, so good. I'm glad that there is a positive caucus available. How has your organization, the Black Prisoners Caucus, how has it helped to inform and educate other young people?
So as you'll see by some of the other individuals that are in this Black Prisoners Caucus and they speak, you'll know that there's different committees. The committee that I'm involved with, the Black Prisoners Caucus, is the Youth Committee. We give back by holding youth summits, building programs that work with organizations and people that work directly with the youth.
Wow.
We build curriculum where we're working with the Family Committee and helping build an curriculum for the education system in this state.
Oh, wow.
It's making us the ability to really reach back to the people that are there with the youth, like I said, every day. We've developed mentorship classes as a groups and as individuals. We believe in the each one teach one methodology, and we're set like in a circle because we push on one side of the circle, it affects everybody in the circle. So what happens to you happens to me, and vice versa.
Wow, that is outstanding. Most people don't know of anything like that going on. Like you said, the depiction is not always positive. Well, Matt, because we know you are coming home at some point, you're coming home, what are your goals for when you arrive back home?
Well, my goals for the future is to become the person, the man that I'm destined to be, to give back to those that are less fortunate and be the example to so many out there that I should be. And we're, you know, I lost track, and we're, a lot of us were lost track in the system that their ideology that was set up, like I said, that was the start of the African slave trade and continues today.
Exactly.
With different
mm-hmm.
tricks, with the same ideology
mm-hmm.
of the rich versus the poor by separating the races. I believe that, you know, by getting out of prison and being that successful person and bringing light to this and educating and helping everyone, especially the young, reach their full potential.
So good. All right. Well, I am just so glad you would take the time to do this interview with me. And we certainly want to promote and make sure people are aware of what you all are doing. And I know that the Black Prisoners Caucus, I'm looking, is out on Facebook for those who want to get more information. Is there also a website, just by chance? I saw one, but I'm not sure.
As of right now, I don't know if there's a website, but if anybody's interested in helping us or letting us help you and through, you know, it's Cooperative Economics,
mm-hmm.
UGMA, which is, you know, through Kwanzaa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Contact our sponsor, Miss Lydia Barlow.
Okay.
LYDIABARLOW
mm-hmm.
at 206-291-6730 or at Lydia@FabiansFund.org.
Okay, Lydia and Fabian, great, 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 great. Well, that's been absolutely super, and I want to say thank you for your courage, your tenacity, your mindset and your willingness to give back in spite of environment and circumstances.
And I'd like to thank everybody for listening and, you know, just for your support in our endeavors and to reach back and really hopefully change this world.
Okay, very good. All right, folks, this has been Roberta. Roberta Inspires Omni Media. And we have been following up on that movie, When They See Us.
All right, folks, that is part one of my interview. I'm shuffling around here trying to get you the best quality of everything. So if this is an organic moment, I'm trying to get in a good head mic, coming in a little bit differently through my board than I normally do. And I'm going to ready up part two of my interview. And I want you to listen very closely to part two. In the second part, we have an opportunity, because he's calling in from the Washington State prison system, and we have an opportunity to talk more about the prison, school to prison pipeline, Martin Luther King's holiday, and then some other opportunities to make a difference and to help these young people overcome some of these difficulties in places where they found themselves unexpectedly. I am going to give a shout out to one of my Facebook friends, Melody Martin, who has from time to time posted on Facebook, an appeal on behalf of her uncle Curtis. I don't know the story at all, but I thought it was a good opportunity to give you a chance to explore it for yourself and to give a shout out to what she's trying to do to help bring awareness. It reminded me of the Just Mercy movie, which I saw on Saturday with family. How moving it is. I'm a graduate of the University of Delaware, so I have ties to Delaware, and one of my college alum brought this movie to my attention and explained that he had basically grown up with
Brian Stevenson as a best friend in elementary school, and I could see that they went to the same high school, and that Mr. Stevenson had been there over the Christmas holiday in that area, his hometown area, and gave a showing of the movie. And that's what kind of prompted my attention. And I, like I said, I think it all coincides with Ava DuVernay and Oprah's efforts to bring more light on the subject of injustice, as it was for what they were formerly called the Central Park Five and now the Exonerated Five. I'm going to let you hear part two of this interview. If you wish to call in, the call-in number is 516-387-1664. Again, the call-in number is 516-387-1664. Let's go on to the second part of this interview, and we'll go from there. Again, as I explain, this is not one of my fancier interviews. This is completely organic, and so I'm just moving you past clips and so forth as I can right here, because couldn't get them uploaded, but anyway, we'll go back to that. So for now, here we go.
Or neglect, and with Benefit Pipeline is calling us.
Hello, everyone. This is Roberta of Roberta Inspires, giving you a part two interview with Matt. This is for our When They Saw Us series that we're doing for Martin Luther King's birthday. And Matt is calling us from the prison in Washington State. Matt, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I am great. I'd like to speak with you today a little bit more about the school to prison pipeline. As we know, that is a serious problem here in the U.S., the school to prison pipeline. And for folks that may not be aware of what it is, I want to just mention briefly, kind of describe something from the from the ACLU's website, who they are actually committed to making a change, to challenging this. They call it a disturbing national trend wherein children are funneled out of public schools and into the juvenile criminal justice systems. Many of these children have learning disabilities or histories of poverty, abuse, or neglect, and would benefit from additional educational and counseling services. Instead, they're isolated, pushed, punished, and pushed out. Zero tolerance policies. Folks, you'll hear some noise in the background. Again, Matt is calling from the actual Washington State prison, so you will hear noise. And we thank him for his time. Zero tolerance policies criminalize minor infractions of school rules, while cops in school lead to students being criminalized for behavior that should be handled inside the school. Students of color are especially vulnerable and push out trend and a discriminatory application of discipline. And we do believe and agree with the ACLU on this point, children should be educated and not incarcerated. Matt, let's speak to that. Tell me about your own experience with the school to prison pipeline.
All right. Well, when I think of the school to prison pipeline and the impact that it has on today's youth, it frustrates me. The reason it does is because I'm a result of it. I came to the adult prison system at the age of 17, and I was involved in the justice system a little bit before that. Although I do take responsibility for my actions, I can see now that a lot of it was the issues I had in school It helped
me yes.
toward the wrong directions in my life.
Right.
My issues started at a young age, and I was placed on an individualized education program in the second grade and told that I had ADD. They prescribed me Ritalin and told that it would help me with my problems. So at the age of 7, I'm now thinking that there's something wrong with me. But one has to ask themselves, how would a little kid perceive and fix a problem before he really even understood what a problem was? I hated taking the Ritalin, and it made me feel that I was worse than the other kids. So there's some that may argue that kids need to be placed on Ritalin and other drugs to help them with their attention problems and other issues. Some say Black children are underdiagnosed. There are two reasons I believe that are more prevalent. Like all kids, they may have different learning styles that teachers don't understand. But the biggest reason is implicit bias and quiet racism. Quiet racism is when one has negative feelings towards certain groups, usually minorities.
Okay.
Although these feelings are more often from fear and discomfort other than outright hatred. This leads to avoidance rather than negative acts. I say anytime you're playing a part that leads any youth into the school to prison pipeline, then that is an outright negative act.
That's great. Keep going.
But the majority of these schools that don't have minority teachers and that they view these young Black kids in ways that European imperialism, implicit bias, and quiet racism has purposely pushed, even before 1619, the year the first enslaved Africans arrived in Jamestown, the teachers view those kids as violent, overly aggressive, and only doing what is natural for Black kids, and that they just don't know better. So the only way to solve a problem is to dope them up or take them out of the equation by suspensions, expulsions, or passing them on. They're never another teacher's problem.
Right.
Some know this is not the truth, but will never admit their racist ideas up front. Some don't even know that they think in a way that is second nature.
So true.
They learn behavior of their own. The sad part is that these Black kids begin to feel that they are what they are told they are. I feel that school got harder and I was kicked out for not doing the work. I spent more time in the streets with other Black kids my age. I learned more from them than the school. Because I was on an IEP, the system had to let me back. A teacher told me years later those classes were called potential dropout classes behind the
school. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Go ahead, Matt.
But I made plenty of bad choices. The Clintons who fooled and continue to fool many Blacks today as a friend to the people were the main pushers of the 1994 crime bill. Hillary Clinton called young Black teens and society had given up on a way. They had given them up on a way. Clinton called these young Black kids super predators.
Super predators.
And never get out.
I was
17 and tried as an accomplice to murder and given 25 years, 10-month sentence, with 25 years not carrying any good time off. 18 years later, I'm dedicated to changing society's view of young Black youth.
Wonderful.
At the same time, changing the view of young people have on themselves.
Okay.
I don't want any youth to have the lack of belief for themselves that I have for myself at their age.
So good.
Since it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I have to ask myself if we live up to his dream. Despite the steps we've made, I will say no. There are still blatant racist policies being pushed
yes.
by our opposition and
yes.
our so-called supporters.
Yes.
At times, I myself have and will again judge someone by other than their character.
Right.
Canada is not right. Although I'm a product of the system that wants to keep everyone separated,
that's
I
right.
continue my growth and hope to continue to fulfill Dr. King's vision by helping those that are younger and my peers see that it starts with us. We can't wait for Uncle Sam or, as my grandma would say, Old Charlie could fix anything.
That's right.
What we have to fix is its division. Are the types of ideas that they have built this country off using our labor to do so? I want to thank Dr. King for his dream and all those who have lost their life in the struggle to be a death or imprisonment. If you are interested in helping me with ending the school to prison pipeline and all youth in general, I can be reached at Matthew Durham, 873218@jpay.com. Now, another issue that I would like to raise before I end is that Washington State.
I want to pause it just for one moment. If you need to reach my guest, please email inspireradio@gmail.com. Inspireradio@gmail.com. Let's continue for another moment.
Washington State Department of Corrections right now.
We're
has stopped some cultural programs in another prison from even meeting together. They're also trying to build up a policy that would eliminate family, meaning our wives, moms, dads, brothers, sisters, and even our children, from participating in our cultural events. There's proven studies that show that when you take somebody's family away from the equation, that they're more likely to recidivism, and that your kids are more
likely
to become a prisoner.
True.
So if you take away our bond with our kids through learning our culture, you're also leading them to this prison industrial complex.
If you're concerned about what these issues that
Washington State Department of Corrections is trying to implement with this new policy they're talking about, I would ask you to contact the Department of Corrections Secretary, Steve Sinclair, at sbsinclair@doc1.washington.gov. That's sdsinclair@doc1.washington.gov to speak about your concerns and what that would look like to take away our family ties to our cultural events. Do you have any questions for me, Roberta?
Oh, Matt, what I have to do is try to keep the tears out of my eyes. You are such an excellent communicator, and you have done such a tremendous job in capsulizing what we see going on. And I sense your passion. I feel your passion. Audience, I hope you can too. And I hope you will follow up with Matt.
Again, if you want to follow up with Matt at the Washington State Prison System, please email inspireradio@gmail.com. As a matter of privacy and protection for him, please send your questions, comments, thoughts, or ideas to inspireradio@gmail.com. That's inspireradio@gmail.com. Let's continue.
You Durham.
I'm trying to cut out certain portions of
that. That's interracial. We're all inclusive to all races. The Black Prisoners Caucus is involved, and we're building. And Black Prisoners Caucus is the BPC, but it also stands for Building Positive Communities. And we're trying to, we always try to work and build these communities that we're absent from but still belong to. So I believe that there is a site that people can look up to look up the Black Prisoners Caucus and what it does. I just believe it has a Facebook page.
Great. Don't worry about the noise, audience. Again, Matt is calling us from a state prison, but sharing his story and the story of so many. And he's also sharing about the National Black Prisoners Caucus, the groups that are active trying to bring about change in the prison system with young people.
So I'd like to say this too is with that, it's not just us doing the work, as a whole to help our prison system and our communities. We have the Hispanic group, the Nuestro Grupo Cultural. We have the Native American Circle. We have the Pacific Islanders Cultural Awareness Group, and then an Indo-European group. So we're all working together to do this work to cross the racial lines that most people think prison is built off of. And by building those barriers, we're able to break down a lot of our own problems and systematic issues that we've built up that I believe the prison system is responsible for maintaining.
Matt, tell us this. Where are you in your sentence? And, and we're hoping about, what you want to do when you come home to change the community and help out.
I'm on my 18th year of my sentence, and hopefully I can be given
25-year sentence, right?
Yes, but due to a law that they had recently passed, I'm able to get out at my 20-year mark because they passed the law.
Wonderful.
If somebody is a juvenile to a long-term imprisonment, you have to give them a chance at meaningful release. So when I do get out, I hope to, start my own business and hopefully get mentored by a few people, to help me and maintain better business strategies. But my main focus on also in my spare time, which is a lot of time, is focus back on the youth, and not only the youth, but their parents who are going through.
Sorry, folks.
I believe you can't fix the youth until you fix their parents. You take the youth out of the home for a little bit, but if you return them back to a home that's not good, or you return them back to that mind state that they have to get back into for their own protection or whatever means they have to live by.
Now, the law that you referred to, is that the one that Brian Stevenson was able to get?
That's the law in Washington State that they made. Reflected off of Miller versus Alabama, and Brian Stevenson was the one in the Miller versus Alabama. What made that law a federal case retroactive was Montgomery versus Louisiana.
Matt, we can hardly wait for you to come home. And I admonish you, your first stop, two things, is straight to media, because you really communicate it well. And then I would love to see you go on to law school and really be able to make a difference, despite whatever may be in your record. There are universities, I know, and I'm going to say the name of it because I know it for a fact. I went to seminary at Regent University, and Regent, which is very conservative, as people see it, but also very open in a lot of ways to diverse issues because of the diverse student population. And there was a young woman from, I don't want to call the wrong name, Calvary Revival Church, who evidently had a record.
I'd like to say one thing, too, and I'm just going to give a small shout-out to the Circle of Life Gardens. You guys can look them up on Facebook to see what they're doing. That's founded by a man named Lawrence Jenkins inside of this prison. What's the name of the Facebook page? Lawrence Jenkins at Facebook. Is there a Circle of Life Facebook? Not yet, but you can go.
Okay.
Lawrence Jenkins.
Okay.
Facebook and look up the Circle of Life Garden.
Hello.
That's a good thing going there.
Okay. Hello to Rosen Becker. I was saying at Regent University, I want you all to know, you all can make a difference, because this woman, young woman at Regent, was able to get into the Regent University Law School with the help of, I believe, Bishop Courtney MacBeth from Calvary Revival. That's something I know for a fact. And then, of course, there is Greg Mathis, whose story everybody knows. So, you know, when you have the opportunity, study everything you can, as you have, about citing those law cases, how impressive. But you guys, be looking forward to that's how you change the system, because being in the legal, with that legal background, and being able to get into politics, and you all can do anything you set your minds to. I'm going to wrap up now, but I want you all to know, and I'm asking my audience to do so, listen and share this episode. It's in honor of Martin Luther King Day, but we're dealing with the issues of right at this minute. Share this episode, and also give me 1 second now. And also make sure that you respond to the links and pray for them. Matt, go ahead. You get the last 60 seconds.
So before I leave again, I'd like to tell everybody you can contact me at Matthew Dunn.
Again, if you have questions or comments or thoughts or information that would be helpful, or further questions, you can contact Matthew through Inspire, Matt, through inspireradio@gmail.com. I want to just say thank you for your time today and being a part of this moving episode. And I'd like to end with a clip from the I Have a Dream speech by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And again, this is going out straight.
On a hot day in August 1963, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered a speech that would
bring it on.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
John Washington served as a massive push for economic and political justice for African Americans. Held during the year celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, crowds marched on the National Mall to watch a variety of musical performances and speeches. Dr. King, a Baptist preacher and prominent civil rights leader, was scheduled to speak towards the end of the day, his debut on the national stage. Up until that point, King mostly addressed small crowds at black churches, rallies, or fundraisers. This time, he would be seen by nearly 250,000 people on the ground, as well as millions at home watching on television. This was an opportunity to reach a wide audience and persuade the public and the government to take action against racial injustice. The night before, King worked with a close group of advisors to get the speech just right. They worked through the night, settling on a final draft in the pre-dawn hours of August 28th. Interestingly, the phrase, "I have a dream," a phrase he used in earlier speeches, was nowhere to be found in this copy. The words wouldn't manifest until almost halfway into Dr. King's speech, when gospel singer Mahalia Jackson, who had performed earlier in the day, called out to him from the sidelines to tell them about the dream. King set his prepared remarks aside and improvised the rest, crafting a soaring speech that would sear into the minds of millions of Americans.
No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
The speech was divided into two parts. The first listed the injustices that African Americans faced: segregation, police brutality, disenfranchisement, and discrimination, and urged a call to nonviolent action. The second launched into King's dream of peace and racial harmony, a vision of a future in which people will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I have a dream.
Highlighting King's skills as a preacher, I Have a Dream was part sermon and part poetry, using rhetorical devices like repetition, rhyme, and vivid metaphor to drive his point home. It was peppered with historic, biblical, and literary references that moved the crowd. This message of struggle and hope became the defining moment not only of King's career, but also the civil rights movement. Both the speech and the March on Washington were credited with helping secure the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. A landmark piece of legislation that ended segregation and banned discrimination on the basis of race or sex in the workplace.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
Well, thank you for listening in, and I do hope and pray that you will use this day as a day of service to others, as we were taught with President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. God bless you. Have a wonderful afternoon, and thank you so much for listening in and your support for Inspire Radio. Oh, so with this, I'm going to exit and tell you it is a new season. It is a new day. It is a new day.
It's a new day. Yes, resting on you. I can feel it. It's flowing my way. Oh, oh, oh. It's a season of power and prosperity. It's a new season, and it's coming to me. Or if you believe that, lift your hands and say,
it's a new season.
It's a new day.